People think, as a money educator, I'm there to sort out their finances. But in reality, my job is about having authentic and sometimes very raw conversations about life and the impact money has on our choices. I'm Vanessa Stoykov, and in this podcast, we're going to follow six people opening up very real conversations about their lives and money at their high school reunion. We'll then take key lessons from my first book, The Breakfast Club for 40-somethings, and dive into their behaviour and how it affects their life choices. I'll be talking about the five powerful pillars of behaviour with some leading CEOs and finance heavyweights to open up the conversations we all should be having about money. And we'll be looking at what financial freedom looks like to six very different people and how the choices they make gets them the life they deserve. So forget about spreadsheets and budgets. This podcast is a story about people we all know. They live in every city and town, and some of them are exactly like you. The decisions they make about money are life-changing, and we'll have front row seats to see what happens. Join us on their story and learn how to build your own pathway to the future you want with money conversations that can radically change your life. Now, let's get down to business. Last time, we met Jane. As a recently divorced mother of two, she had a lot on her plate.
Thanks for minding the kids on Saturday, Mum. No, I won't be late. We've got a rental inspection, so I've got to clean up. Anyway, I'll be home by their bedtime and dinner will be in the fridge. Thanks a lot, Mum.
Jane had beliefs about her success that were holding her back. Uncomfortable conversations were had, but they led to Jane confronting her ideas and learning new lessons. Lessons that held the key to taking control of her finances. This week, we'll be learning about our fourth powerful pillar of money, desire. Desire pulls us forward and fuels our ambition. But unchecked, desire can come at a heavy price, dragging us in to pay for it all. Trying to look like we have it all while peddling like crazy to keep it afloat is exhausting and misery-inducing. Debt can have a crushing effect on the soul. Social media parades the best part of everyone's lives and makes new desires just so easy to reach. And with everything so available but costs higher than ever, we can find ourselves following an unachievable amount of desire. Keeping up with the Joneses has intensified to not just keeping up with our neighbours, but our entire social media friendship group. But can we afford the lifestyles we desire, and will it bring us the life we truly want? Let's face it, our culture celebrates desire. We are applauded for having big dreams and ambitions, and often ridiculed for not thinking big enough. So when we've been taught to want it all, how do we stop the race from running us? Let's get to know Josie. She's a financially adept woman driven by desire, and boy does it show. She's devoted her life to building a successful communications business from the ground up and now enjoys enviable levels of financial success.
Hello. Just letting you know I've checked in. The presidential suite. It's perfect. Now, please book my flight out in 5 days, not six. The client in London rescheduled. I'll need accommodation changed as well. I'll expect to be back in Sydney in a week. Let me know when you get this. Okay, talk soon.
Her business turns over more than $10 million a year, including bonuses. $1 million of that goes to Josie. With 5 properties in her portfolio, a wardrobe full of designer clothes, Josie indeed does look like she can have it all. So she can afford to have expensive tastes in fashion, fine dining and hotel accommodation. And since she's single with no kids, she doesn't have any dependents or the bills that come with it. But underneath those designer gowns, Josie is peddling like crazy. Because even with her financial success, there's something Josie is desperate not to let catch up with her. Debt.
Hello, do you mind ringing these up? I'll be taking all of them, thank you. Do you take Amex?
Josie, you just spent $7,000 on one outfit.
I can claim it. Receipt in the bag, please. I can't afford to skimp on first impressions with a new client. Not if I want them to be my client.
Josie's business is key woman dependent. She runs that show. And with no other owners, it's entirely up to Josie to bring in the big clients and the big bucks. The business turns over a lot of money, but has matching overheads. Her business needs strong cash flow to keep running, and without new clients, the costs threaten to catch up to Josie. On top of that, her five properties are heavily leveraged and expensive to maintain. Behind the scenes, Josie is walking a tightrope, balancing income against costs in a high-stakes, risk-versus-reward scenario. So far, Josie has found this pressure to be exhilarating. She thrived under it and used it to fuel her drive to succeed. But lately, she's not getting the excitement out of it she once did. In fact, it's starting to exhaust her. With how her business is set up, she's starting to wonder if she's ever going to be able to slow down. Josie has to confront the quality that has driven her ambition and success: desire. Our fourth powerful pillar of money. To help me break down Josie's dilemma, I've brought on board a long-term friend of mine from the finance industry. She's a high-powered and successful woman herself, with her own awareness of desire. I'd like to welcome Jenny Josling, Chair of Orbis Investments. Now, JJ, you know, Josie's obviously very successful, particularly on the outside to everyone that would have a look in, but she isn't a cash flow trap, although she makes large sums of money. You know, her life isn't perfect, and she's actually exposed herself to a fair bit of financial danger with the amount of debt she's gone into on investment properties. What could happen here?
Oh, there's so much that could go wrong in this scenario. Look, she's not very well diversified. Often there's two people earning the money and it's just her, so everything's reliant on her. In particular, she's got a big business dependent on sort of rolling cash flow. And if that all stops, it's actually expensive to wind up a business because you end up with quite a lot of liabilities without the cash flow. Mm. If you don't start that process early enough, she could get into some real trouble. So look, she's on paper
perfect. What happens if she loses cash flow in the business and you default on a few of those mortgage payments, or people don't stay at her Airbnb?
If she has cash flow problems in the business, it could all go totally pear-shaped. If she's forced to sell and the market slows down a bit, she could end up with what they call negative equity, where, you know, you've paid 100 grand for the property, but you've got to sell it for 60 grand and you've borrowed 80 grand. Right. So she could get into some steep trouble there.
I've learned a thing or two from you in my time. As long as the cash flow keeps coming in and you can service the loans,
yeah,
it's an amazing achievement, because at the end, yeah, of it, you've got assets that will grow in value over time.
But yeah,
it's also means you've got to keep pumping the money in. There can be no pause. And if it's one thing I've learned running my own media business for 23 years, is that cash flow is king. And cash flow, even when you've got assets and big clients and amazing reputation like Josie has, she still had to keep selling. And I think when you're in that position, no matter how smart you've been with investments, what you really need is liquidity. Liquidity gives you options. By liquidity, I mean access to cash.
Working capital is the sort of formal word for it in the boring business world, but it's the thing that brings most small to medium businesses undone, if they come undone, is they just get to that point where the cash isn't there and they tend to focus on revenue. Look, I'm bringing this much revenue and I'm turning over. That means jack shit if you actually haven't got the cash flow to get through the next few months. So it's just massively important. And look, it's hard. In a lot of businesses, it's hard.
The business expenses are high, and it's easy to justify why. Keeping up appearances to keep the clients happy are costs that Josie's willing to take on to keep things running. But her properties aren't the same case. She owns a terrace in Paddington, but it's since been used as collateral against four other properties. They're a riskier venture, and although they bring in a lot of income, she's taken on millions in debt in order to get them up and running. Over time, they'll pay themselves off, if nothing goes wrong. She had the place in Paddington she owned.
Yeah, so
all the loans were based off that one property.
Exactly. And then I think she's probably earned enough and put enough cash into it. Then she's borrowed and bought others. If rates go up, she could get into a bit of a scary situation. She's got no diversifier in her life. In investments, okay, as long as you haven't got to sell it. You know, I always think about what's the upside and what's the downside. If you buy a property, the bank's lent you the money, so it's really their problem if you've got to hand the keys back. But if you're forced to sell it for less than what you bought it and you realise a loss, that is your problem. So I always do sort of the very simple pros and cons, or boring finance cost cost-benefit analysis.
I love the way your brain works. It's taught me so much about structured thinking. Actually, I think there's a psychological issue in Australia around being a property owner or not. I speak to so many millennials who just really have a bitter disappointment around the ability to enter the property market.
I get it.
Yeah, so do I. So I bought my first unit and it was 470 grand and I got the first homeowners 7 grand, whatever.
Sure.
Anyone could do 470. Now that apartment's $1 million.
Yeah, I know it's ridiculous. And look, I worry about outcomes because the banks are lending a lot of money. You know, when I borrowed for my first house, I think the banks at that stage would lend you probably 2 times your gross income. Now they'll lend you up to 8 times. That's quite worrying depending on what the interest rate environment will do. So I think back to the bitterness of the millennials, I think that's warranted. But she's got a good property portfolio, but that's it. She hasn't got other asset classes. So that's always dangerous, having everything in sort of one bucket. I suspect she's done all that in a low interest rate environment. If rates go up, that could put a massive amount of tension on it. On paper, at this static point in time, looks okay. From the outside world, she looks fantastic, like literally looks fantastic. Yeah. She's got the designer clothes and handbags and the nice car and what looks like this amazing property portfolio. But people never understand the debt behind properties. I say that to my kids when they talk about how great someone else's life is. I'm like, you don't know the whole story. You don't know what their balance sheet looks like. In Sydney, there's a lot of people that are geared up out there, and the Josie's, she's one of them. She's not fully geared, but in the sense that her business could potentially be volatile, she is highly geared because she's geared to the business, and the business has also led her to be geared to her properties.
She's walking a fine line.
She's walking a fine line, and I think she starts to realise it. It's a time in her life. She's a high achiever. So it's a personality type. So that's naturally her disposition. Whichever field she went into, I suspect she would have got to that same level. Interestingly, I think the desire for the designer stuff and the hotel rooms and the handbags and sort of, you know, needing that to keep going and the investment properties, I actually think she desired more than anything independence.
Josie has worked hard to set up her financial independence, but the desire for that independence is causing her to take on a lot of pressure, more pressure than she now wants to handle. It's a crucial time for Josie to reflect on what desires are driving her forward and what desires are going to drive her crazy.
So Josie's at that time where she's ready to self-reflect. She's kicked a lot of goals and I think she's lost her sense of purpose. She's got the independence. The trap of the debt, I think, is actually a side effect of her high achiever personality plus the strive for independence. She's done incredibly well and it's easy to pick up debt along the way. She's on a bit of a precipice, but I think it's just starting to dawn on her. Maybe she's starting to self-reflect a little bit. She's starting to think about where she's at and what could go wrong. But she's definitely poised very dangerously. She could work out how to cut her losses pretty quickly. Like, she's got equity, so she owns a reasonable amount of stuff. But once you get into a situation where you've got losses that you've got to pay off, that's scary. Her desire is 2 things, independence and a sense of purpose.
You understand Josie, so I'm intrigued because we all want independence. Women certainly have wanted it, but at the end of the day, everyone wants to control their own world and be independent.
Like, exactly,
you do want self-determination. If you don't have self-determination and independence, every decision you make is compromise. I did have my nana once say, it's as easy to fall in love with a rich man as a poor. And that was good advice. Based on being pragmatic, she went through World War II, her fiancé died, and she got married to someone 6 weeks later that she'd met because she wanted to have children and didn't want to look after her ageing parents and 8 siblings.
There's a lot of young couples these days where the man will stay at home and the woman will be the primary breadwinner, or they'll both work, but the woman may have a job that brings in more money. So for men, it's just as important, but it's independence.
There's a have and a have not in Australia, and it's reflective of the world that's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
It is.
It's a real issue.
Yeah.
It's real. Yeah. It's not fair. And there's always been a 20% of society that's vulnerable, and we have an obligation as a human race to look after our most vulnerable. There's this whole middle class now that is so asset rich, cash poor, time poor.
Yeah.
People have an opportunity to make a choice to live differently now. And if you've got an asset like a home that you can get cash out of, if that's not what you want anymore, then that's okay. What I want people to do is have permission to have the life they want. Then how do you get that financially? Josie wanted to feel like she was good enough. She came from middle class. She was attractive. She ended up being the beautiful woman that did a lot of great deals. She's at the point, you're right, wanted independence, but then wants love and not the pressure. I think you get to a point in your life when you're older, and now your kids are older too. I don't have the energy. You do want to spend different time. You want to spend time with good friends. You want to have more laughs. You want to smell the roses.
When we get back to Josie, it's been a month since the reunion. She's had a lot to weigh up. The constant pressure of desire used to feed her energy in her 20s and 30s, but it's now starting to sap it. She's realised that if she wants to free up some time for herself, and if she wants the time and energy to put into a new relationship, she needs advice and financial planning to do two big things. The first, get control of her personal finances to reduce her debt and ease the pressure of the lavish lifestyle.
Hey, handsome. Yeah, I'm just about to have the meeting about sorting out the properties. The plan is that I've got too much risk with all five, and I agree. I'll let you know how it goes. I can't wait to see you on Sunday. Oh, you're coming back early. Oh, babe, I'll call you right back in an hour. I miss you too.
Josie sold off three of her five properties, allowing her to keep her main place in Paddington and her heritage getaway in Bowral. Downsizing her property portfolio cut out a lot of her debt and reduced the pressure she felt in servicing it. This was a crucial first step in reining in the pressure of her desires.
You know, we talked about property and, you know, it's hard for this next generation to get into property. It's actually just not all about that. Property really highlights the gap because it's just become so extreme. We just get a bit obsessed with it in Australia. And I know, again, it sounds a bit rich coming from me. And I keep going back to this thing about young people and property. You don't have to have a house to have a sense of purpose that you own. There's some wonderful things you can do in your life without owning a house. And if you do the maths, you really have to query, you know, at certain times in the market, if it's worth it, you can make money out of other things. There's many different ways to increase your wealth. It's very hard to make money doing what everyone else does. And what's everyone doing at the moment? Everyone's buying property. So there must be other things out there, yeah, other ways, yeah, that you can make money. And so by the time something's got that extreme, it's unlikely you're going to make money.
It's like when the cab driver's giving you stock tips, you know it's over.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's been happening for a while.
Yeah, that's right.
you can have great quality of life. I'm very exposed to shares because my business invests in shares. So I've been very careful to have property as a diversifier. So I think just get back to that sense of purpose and, you know, what are you trying to achieve? Like, stop and look at what you're trying to do. And it's hard. I think that's the big point. It's really hard to do.
The second big task in front of Josie is more complicated. It's to figure out a succession plan for her business and a way to transfer some of the burden and financial risk away from Josie. But her desire has put her in a position of maximum control as well as maximum risk.
One of the things Josie really grappled with was on a succession plan for her business, because the thing about a business like hers is it relies on a charismatic individual to keep bringing work in. And that means she could never see the pressure lifting off her while ever the overheads were that big. She had to keep pulling. And it was either get your staff to buy in so that they're more bought in, they own it and they're going to take on more when you have a sort of staff buyout. You come from the investment world. Succession is, you guys think of that when you get the job almost. You're sort of planning on when you leave how it'll look. And I love that about the finance industry. I've learned a lot.
On the succession thing, in finance, we manage money for people, and that's actually about the person managing the money. They need to be trustworthy. They need to know what they're doing. And so, you know, when you end up managing a lot of money, which a lot of asset managers do in our business, you need to make sure that that trust goes through generations, you know, that if someone stops managing the money, that there is actually a process in place. It is a bit embedded into our system, but it starts from day dot. We bring on graduates with a view to their path. Can they be a successor? It's a big conversation. I think in small to mid-sized businesses, you don't start with that thought process. And it is helpful. I think a lot of businesses sort of stumble into it. I think it is actually a good thing to start early on. My hat goes off to small to mid-sized businesses because they work incredibly hard. The government gives them all sorts of red tape to jump through, and then you've got to think about succession and working capital and and everything else. But it is an important thing. And I don't think it hits you younger and energetic, as we were saying, as you get a bit older and your energy does slow down a bit and your sense of purpose changes. What you thought you wanted to do may not be what you want to do in that next phase of your life. I'm starting to call it the best 30 of life. Sense of purpose is hugely important and it'll change over time. If you're a high achiever personality, it's hard to stop. I had some great people coming up behind me who were ready for the role. I could have done it for a few more years, but there was an element where I was starting to get a little bit tired. I wanted to change my sense of purpose somewhat, a bit like Josie. I think it's part of that reflection, but it's very hard to stop and reflect. It's an incredibly hard thing to do.
Some people have a head for money and some don't. Yeah. I didn't. Like, I'd head for like spending it and I'd done well making it because I love my work.
But yeah.
I never had the head for how to grow wealth because I was taught you buy a house, you save money. Whatever drives you at some point, but the power of a good advisor, I mean, I've got people like you in my life. You give me such good counsel. You need to find people in your life, like Josie did, that can give you the permission to think differently. After advice from her financial advisor, Josie talked to her staff about buying into the business. Her account director and GM could both afford a stake, and most importantly, they were the people Josie trusted. This meant she could share the burden of the business without giving up control. And all that pressure would make space for Josie to enjoy her life and her newly rekindled relationship. People in their lives at this age who do want change, and if you do own a business or you need to think, I need a pathway out, do you think Josie would have done it without advice? Like, what do you think would have happened? The part where he comes in and gives her permission just to fucking slow down and fall in love, and but he's a financial planner and all he did was give her cash flow advice. So do you think she would have done it without him?
I actually don't.
Neither do I.
The big point of that is she needed permission. And sometimes you need to give yourself permission to do things that you wouldn't otherwise do it. So having an external person validate like that is hugely important. So with finances, obviously that's an advisor can help you or a trusted friend. One thing that's driven myself and has ended up with me being what people would consider successful in life financially has been independence. Growing up and watching a sort of stay-at-home mum who wasn't able to work because she worked at the bank, and in those days when you got married, you weren't allowed to work. So I saw firsthand what it was like to have your independence stifled a bit. And look, my parents, you know, they've been married 60 years. But there was always this bit of my mum that wanted to burst out. And I could see it in some of her friends, these incredibly smart women who were constrained. And look, their husbands were great and they'd hand over a bit of the paycheck, but there still wasn't that total independence where you could say, oh, I see that. I want that. I want to buy that out of my own money and not have someone tell me I can't.
That's been the story of my whole life. I'm like, you just summed up how I live.
Exactly. So you want that independence. And with Josie, it's pretty clear as she sort of starts this new life, it's really important to her that she's hanging on to that financial independence. So she's got the guy with the money, but she's like, I'm okay with that because I've got my own money. In the early days, she gets to this point where she's not happy. I think she's probably starting to lose her sense of purpose because the job gave her that sense of purpose. And after you get to a time in your life and your career where that changes and you're like, yeah, okay, I can do it. I've proven that I can do it. And that's part of the high achiever personality. But there's sort of a bit of a what next. And I think it takes a while for people to work that out.
It's easy to let the pace of our lives overtake us, to let the things we've wanted determine the shape of our lives for years to come. But as we grow, we change and we shift. So do our desires. Josie's ambition had fueled her life. And when her goals started to change, it felt almost impossible to swim against the current. But Josie has always been a problem solver. With the right advice and an outside perspective, Josie was able to identify the disconnect between the life she was living and the future she wanted. She made big changes, confronting ones, giving up control and redefining what she wanted. These changes are what allowed Josie to take control of her desire instead of letting desire control her.
It was such a relief to finally talk to someone about my financial position because I have always prided and presented myself on being self-made. My concerns around finances haven't always been something I felt comfortable expressing. But professional financial advice pertains to any income level. Now this added stress I was placing on myself of running a business solo and managing 5 properties is starting to lift. I can relax knowing that I can take my foot off the pedal and everything I've worked for is still there. And I can finally enjoy being with Brad.
I feel like we're at a point where people have a growth mindset and they're open to change.
Yeah.
So that helps when you're trying to tell a story and people are ready to hear it. Like, I feel like now is my time, 27 years into finance and 23 of running Evolution and writing and making shows and doing everything I've done has been an evolution to go, okay, at this point, now's the time. People are going to connect with this.
Yeah.
People are going to benefit.
My goal's been to have a diversified investment portfolio so that I can enjoy the best third of my life. And that means having a mix of stuff and, you know, keep my husband happy. He's had a good career and he wanted to invest his money into something where he could have some fun. And for him, that's building shit. I think just acknowledge it will change. It won't stay the same. So make sure you do stop and reflect. There's a lot to stop and think about and just say, okay, is this working for me or am I just caught up in a bit of a flow here?
You've summarized perfectly the sort of overarching message of the book, which is it's going to change and now's the time to think about it. JJ, as always, you've given me lots to think about. I've liked your spin on Josie. I'm thinking of her a bit differently myself now, so thank you. And I look forward to talking to you again.
Okay, thank you very much for having me.
We've started getting real about money, but we're only just scratching the surface. Tune in to the rest of this podcast series for more insights on how those five powerful pillars can help us unlearn what we think we know about money, because money is sexy, but finance is boring. Jump on to VanessaStoykov.com to find me and all the resources you need to experience your own financial flashpoints, moments of realization about the changes you want to make. You can also find my latest book, The Five Conversations About Money to Radically Change Your Life, and start applying the lessons learned by our characters to your own life today. I'm Vanessa Stoykov. Let's talk again soon.